trip back to Victoria for all those in navy blue.
Yes, hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fox Football Podcast from the hotel room of one Andrew Harper in the Intercontinental Dubai, about a Ryan Grant throw-in away from where the Socceroos are right now. Daniel Garb here with you, alongside, of course, Andy Harper and Brenton Speed, who both called Australia's 3-0 win over Palestine, and that makes life just a lot more pleasant, doesn't it, boys, in Socceroos land?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's a bit ridiculous, really, that a game against Palestine can bring such relief, but not only the loss against Jordan, but the manner of the loss concerned a lot of people. Some players, too many players, really down on form, but very happy to see them recover and play so well today to get that win. Now the question remains, you know, how much better can they get? Because they'll need to get better still.
And Jordan franked that form. They're looking like a really good team at this 17th AFC Asian Cup when they rolled Syria the night before. Then Bernstanger is gone. So suddenly Group B begins to evolve that little bit more. But I thought it was interesting that Graham Arnold was so open tactically with you pre-game when you asked him about what the inclusions were all about. And he said Jackson Irvine had come into the team to deal with the threat of Wadi, the big striker. And he picked him up at each and every set piece. He picked him up at each and every goal kick for the long ball and at least tried to challenge him because he was such a handful. So that's a good pickup by the scouts. And Arnie, watching all the vision of what Palestine could produce, he was about the only threat. And interesting that he started as well ahead of Islame. But the big story is Jamie McLaren gets the monkey off his back. Gets his first Socceroos goal after fluffing one inside 3 minutes. And you thought, oh no, is that the last chance McLaren's going to get in this game? But then a beautiful ball in by Rogic, who was also criticised in the last game, and a fabulous header. And then away they went. The Economides picking out Mabil at the back post. And then it was all rounded off by Yanu in the last couple of minutes or so. So for Australia to get three goals and a comprehensive 3 points... Still got work to do, though, in the next game.
Most certainly. I loved, we spoke about this before, Harps, on a recorded interview for Fox Football, but I loved the performance of Mark Milligan. I know you did as well. I thought that first half an hour, he set the tone on the ball and off the ball. And you could tell it was a captain saying, all right, we've just, the intent's got to be there. It's got to be there early on. The way that he passed it, putting pace on the pass, and then winning the ball back in certain situations, because they gave him space. They sat so deep that Milligan had all the space in the world, so he had to have an influence. I just thought it was a wonderful captain's performance.
Yeah, so I think if he doesn't set that platform, I agree. I thought he was outstanding, a real captain's knock, and it enabled the younger guys, who then really flourished, and to do their thing. And it just poses those two questions. Firstly, if Milligan couldn't have set that foundation, would someone else have been able to? Thankfully, we haven't got an answer to that. We don't need one yet, but in the fullness of time, there are going to be have to be other people who do step into that breach. If Milligan's either not playing well one particular day or he's unavailable, so I thought that was outstanding. And but the other thing that remains unanswered is that if those chances aren't converted inside those 20 minutes to give the 2-goal lead, what does that do to the team? Does the confidence start dripping away? I think the most direct answer to that goes to Speedy's point, where Jamie McLaren could easily have turned to water when you consider his lack of success at national team level to this point, combined with all the criticism and commentary swirling around the team and his performances. That air swing off that beautiful work from Economides would have sent a lot lesser people to an early institution, right? But such is his self-belief, it didn't evidently have that impact on him. So if they didn't get those 2 goals when they did, so beautifully executed, you have to think that they might have been able to persevere. But again, what goes against that is up until the Yanu goal, the third goal, they played a lot of really good build-up again, but just couldn't find... It was a similar problem, wasn't it? But I thought the variation around the penalty area was a lot better today than the Jordan match, which... It just descended into a like a salad bowl towards the end. It was horrible to watch. Hence the nervousness that everyone took into today's game. And I think one of the keys for that was Milligan. I thought his pass selection in the middle to front third was outstanding, and it really unlocked a lot of the confidence issues for a number of players.
And now the conundrum, as we alluded to in the call, is does Milligan stay in midfield, or does he go back to the heart of defence? Yeah. Because unfortunately, Trent Sainsbury picked up a late yellow card in the game for time wasting. You saw his reaction immediately. It looked like the yellow card meant a lot to him, and that's because he picked up one in the first game. A needless one given up here, so he's banned from the Serie A game. We've still got work to do. We must draw that game.
Okay, so
otherwise,
we're
hoping.
What would you do?
Well, I think Milligan alongside Degenek at the back. I wanted to see Luongo play alongside Irvine today in midfield. So that looks like an obvious combination. And hopefully Luongo embraces that challenge if they do go that way and really plays with a bit of swagger in that role.
I mean, I guess Matt German's the guy who comes in if he decides to leave Milligan in midfield and plays him as a centre-back. Hasn't played a lot of football now. That's a big ask. I think the way he plays, it's similar to the Sydney FC model, the two absolute screeners. I was surprised how deep Jackson Irvine sat. I thought he'd get forward a bit more. But I started thinking in the second half, that's Brandon O'Neill and Josh Brillante. Sit back, the two nightclub bouncers, as we called them before, protect the back four. So if you're playing it that way, I think you can put Luongo and Irvine together because their positioning in itself will give the defence a bit of protection, and then you can put Milligan back. So that's probably the way I would go as well, considering the formation more so than the personnel.
Yeah, well then, it's hard to disagree with what you're saying, except that if you take Milligan out of midfield, then you take that influence out of midfield, which at least two-thirds of this discussion, we haven't even asked you about your thoughts on Milligan, but certainly two-thirds of this discussion believes that Milligan in midfield, with his passing discipline, his passing efficiency, his pass selection, set a template for the rest of the team today. Now, do you sacrifice that in the hope, belief that Mas Luongo is going to come and perform the same role? Totally capable of doing it, of course. And the other thing to consider, as you've picked up, Speedy, is that Matt German, who was a late developer in international football, came to the fore marking Omar Alsamah in those playoff matches. Mm. So, you know, depending on how Matty's career has been tracking in Saudi Arabia, again, where he plays against Omar Alsamah, maybe Graham Arnold thinks we'll just do a straight cut and paste. Matty Yerman's in, and it means we don't have to make the two changes to cover for the one. We're not, you know, as a principle, my view is always make the minimum changes to something that's worked where you can. And so that's why I think I would prefer, without knowing the guy's form, to declare my hand here. I don't know how Matt German's been going. But it's as a straight cut and paste is always my preference.
And on further thought, I prefer Milligan when he's got people behind him. I don't like him in the last line of defence for the Socceroos. I like him in that midfield role when he can make the occasional mistake, lose possession and be beaten for speed and someone else is there to bail him out. Very occasionally that happens. And as you say, he can set the tempo with his passing, find those angles. He fired in another brilliant ball to McLaren's feet today. And then McLaren somewhat fortunately teed up Mabil for a chance that he should have buried. So that passing out of midfield from Milligan, I don't think you give it up, unfortunately, with Sainsbury out of the team.
Let's get back onto the game that's just finished. As a striker, Harps, going through something like Jamie McLaren has gone through, I wouldn't say it's a gold drought because he's been in and out of the national team, but he hasn't taken that chance yet. And because we've got the cautionary tale of Scott McDonald, we know how debilitating it can be in Australian football if you don't find the back of the net. Eventually, you don't get any more chances. So it's happened for him now. How big a step is that? Is it just a goal against Palestine? It doesn't change too much? Or can it be the platform for him to not necessarily be the answer to our striking woes, but present a damn good option?
Yeah, well, I don't think Jamie's out of the woods yet. I mean, huge celebration, you know, for the context of the goal and the job it did for the national team, and huge for Jamie as well, because I don't know that there's many right-minded or fair-minded people who just don't wish the best for the guys, right? And don't like to see them struggling in this sense. There's always that small minority who seem to rejoice in people's shortcomings and particular travails, but that's not the majority. And I would suggest there's a big collective relief that Jamie was able to score finally. Nevertheless, you know, he's not out of the woods yet. I mean, his goal scoring at national team is one thing. His club football has hit a hiatus as well recently. The only way a guy of his standing and his position can deal with that is by being a threat, a constant threat, which doesn't always mean transferring into goals. But when you're watching Jamie playing, at the moment, if he's not scoring, he's not threatening. And there are other players who sometimes play up front. They don't have a huge goal scoring record, but they're threats.
Mm.
And this national team, whether it's Jamie McLaren or someone else, the missing piece for this, in general terms, for this national team is being a constant goal threat. They're a constant territorial threat. They're a constant possession threat. They constantly penetrate opposing teams for the first two-thirds of the field. Even they constantly penetrate into the penalty area, right? But that's where the threat dries up.
Yeah.
And whether it's Jamie scoring or being part of that constant threat where defenders are definitely on their toes, I don't think I'm being hypercritical by suggesting he's not at that stage yet. And so that's why, I mean, he's not out of the woods. Great goal, great context, and a personal achievement of massive significance, but still a lot of work to do.
It's such an unlikely way for McLaren to break his drought as well, a header from 16 yards out nearly.
Although he said after the game, anyone who says I can't head the ball, there's your answer. So a little snipe from him to the critics.
But it was his first shot on target as a Socceroo. And he must be up to 8 hours of football now as a Socceroo. And I think no other shots on target today against Palestine. It was a ranked 99 in the world. So he has one shot on target in his Socceroo's career and one goal now. So well done, monkey off his back. But as Harps is alluding to, is he doing enough in general play to maintain his spot when Andrew Naboot is fit and available? Does Naboot come straight in for McLaren? Did Yanu do enough off the bench? He scores a goal in limited time. And also, there was a Matty Ryan pinged clearance by the goalkeeper that went about 65 metres on the fly. And Yanu brought it down on the chest and then laid off the ball, and Australia was away. That's good signs for Yanu, who was the last into the squad in the attacking ranks. And I know, Harps, you're impressed by what he's doing in with limited exposure.
Yeah, I mean, you look at his playing CV in his career, and it should be translating more than it has. And if Graham Arnold can unlock that one, and it's sort of a bit of a bizarre thing to say because he didn't pick him in the squad originally. So maybe we're seeing things or imagining things that either don't exist or Graham Arnold certainly doesn't believe in, but the guy's got pedigree, and we haven't seen it much at national team level, but we saw it today, right? That was extraordinarily difficult, what he did in receiving that ball from Matt Ryan to bring the ball down on his chest from a great height and turn in the same movement and keep the attack going. That's class, right? That is class. And the header was good. So now he's scored a couple in consecutive ish games. Plus, he's at Clubland, he's back. He's got rid of the dalliance with Chinese football and whatever that meant to him. And, it's too often a graveyard for too many players, you know, that part of the world and other parts of Asia. And so now it seems like, you know, he's back on the beaten track. And, mate, his contributions today were classy, and it's definitely food for thought.
Chris Economides was named man of the match by the Socceroos fans. Can't argue too much with that. If you like Mark Milligan's game, well then, yeah, that probably goes close too. But this kid just continues to impress, regardless the standard, regardless the situation. He's so level-headed. Again, we talk about Milligan in that first 20 minutes. Economides in the first five. The fact that he gets on the ball, he's happy to soak up pressure, he's happy to try turn his man. That sends a message, doesn't it, to his teammates? Like, we've got to get in behind here. Against Jordan, we were too pedestrian. We pondered on it too much. For me, that set a big tone. And then he carries it on with a couple of assists. I mean, we've spoken about Daniel Arzani and Wax Lyrical. I'm not trying to compare the two, but what a player this kid can be. I mean, he's just a huge asset under Arnold's formation as well, isn't he?
And doing great things at the Perth Glory, an eye for goal as well as the ability to put the ball in the right place for teammates. I mean, that ball for Mobile is as good as it gets to take defenders out of the equation. Defenders were confused about who that ball was intended for. The left back for Palestine just lost Mobile completely, and he just strolled in because he knew. He put his hand up and Economides saw him, floated the ball to the back post. It was a wonderful goal all round. But I think today, we witnessed the changing of the guard. Robbie Crewe's out, Economides in. Robbie's been a great servant for Australia, but I think in recent years he's almost got the position by default and hasn't been adding a lot to the team. I know he's been the subject of the Boo Boys But I've put it on the record. I don't think he's been good enough, and I think he should have been replaced a long time ago as a starter for the Socceroos. Now it's finally happened. He came off the bench for a late cameo, but I think now you see that Economides has to start ahead of Cruz on the left wing for Australia. It's standing out big time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you there. It had to happen. Robbie, his confidence just seems to be shot. I'm not sure. I'm sure he wants to play, but I'm not sure he's comfortable in that situation right now because he knows he's not contributing as much as he should. But the treatment's nonsense. Like whenever a Socceroos squad list is put up, it's a race to see who can comment about Robbie Cruz first. I mean, it's garbage considering what this guy's done. But if you actually constructively talk about him, I don't think anyone can dispute that a change had to be made. And now he's got to work his way back. I'll be honest, I saw Graham Arnold talk to him in the team hotel the day before the final training session, and I thought he's probably dropped in there. And I hope he said to him, I'm sure he did, you can work your way back from this. You've still got something to give the national team because he's not way past it yet. He just needs to find that confidence from somewhere yet again.
And sadly for Robbie, I think his body has copped so much. We've often talked about it. Andy, in your commentary, you were probably the first to pick up on it, that Robbie Cruz just invites these challenges, and he was chopped down when he was playing for the Melbourne Victory in the AFC Champions League, seemingly game after game. He copped a terrible challenge in the A-League with the Melbourne Victory as well, when he scored that wonder goal from memory. And his legs have copped that much treatment that there's not a lot of confidence right now in the body as well to deliver what he knows he used to be capable of. And I hope he returns to that level. But you're seeing the big story breaking in world sport right now is Andy Murray. His body can do it no longer. His hip is stuffed and he's maybe out of tennis, retired for good after this Australian Open. Sometimes the body gives out and it's got no more.
You know, there's an abundance of opportunities emerging in that part of the field. So any player is not contributing or down in form or down in confidence. I mean, there need to be structures to accommodate those frailties and deal with those personalities and whatever fallout. But the fact of the matter is the competition's going to get white hot. And there's different styles of players coming into these positions. So you compare Boyle, who's now everyone's favourite after a game and a bit, understandably so, but I mean, he hasn't passed the time test by any means, so we don't know if he's going to actually develop into a rusted on Socceroo or not. The signs at the moment are very promising, but let's just assume he does, right? Let's assume once he gets over this injury and we send out our condolences to him that he does continue to develop. So then you've got Awima Bill, who's just not taken a backward step since the door's been opened for him. Economides, fantastic. And Matthew Leckie, as ostensibly in a wide player, maybe does he move into centre forward? And then Robbie Cruz and Daniel Arzani does he take on Tommy Rogic as a number 10, or does he stay as a winger? So you've got not only numbers of people for these types of positions, they're different styles of players as well, which I think is a fantastic thing to consider. And you know, Economides, great today. Great off the bench against Jordan. Great when he came back for the Wanderers. Excellent at Perth. You know, quite justified call-up. And I haven't mentioned Andrew Naboot either as another one of those considerations. So, you know, changing of the guard. I read the substitution on of Robbie Cruz today as an embodiment of the discussions you two guys have just had, right? There's a perception that the sand's probably run out of the hourglass or close to. But why would Graham Arnold in that instance, unless Andrew Boot's not fit, but I didn't gather that at all, why would Graham Arnold put Robbie Cruz on for the last few minutes and not Andrew Naboot? And it's got to be because of what you guys have said, that I need to keep the confidence of this guy going, because would he be... You'd have to be inhuman, despite all the bravado, to not, and I'm not on social media, but I hear you guys talk about it, and that the players have to come out into defence of one of their teammates about the abuse. I mean, what planet are people on where they think that this is a nice society to be part of? And eventually that's got to take its toll on someone.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's horrible. So I believe he can come and rise above it, whether it's going to be in the national team circuit or not. To me, he's immaterial now. It just plays out his career however long that is, does the very best that he can.
Just quickly on Martin Boyle, he actually hasn't played in a competitive fixture for Australia. So if he has a change of heart and decides, well, maybe Scotland was the way I should have gone, he actually can make that switch. Hopefully that doesn't happen because I think we've all seen that he can be an asset for the Socceroos. It was a wonderful afternoon at the Al Rashid Stadium in Dubai, of course. We've been travelling all over the place. I can't even remember what city we're in Dubai. It was an open-air stadium. Unfortunately, there weren't enough gates. So some of the Socceroos fans only got in at halftime, which is absolutely ridiculous. And yeah, there are some issues with the AFC. But the sun coming in caused Matty Ryan some problems in the second half. Now, Harps, as a retro football lover, was it a throwback to 80s NSL games when you saw Matty Ryan don the AFC cap, if you don't mind, for the second half?
Yeah, it shit the reserve. Yeah, we didn't have floodlights. I mean, is it the fact that I'm wearing my Combi t-shirt that makes you think I'm a retro guy? Well, what do you say about Matt Ryan, cap or no cap? Is he going to be the next legend out of this Socceroos team? Is he the next generation legend? I think he probably is. He's got the personality for it. He's the captain in waiting, as far as I'm concerned.
Who are we talking about when you throw on the retro? Who was wearing the cap back in the day in the NSL?
He could sense whatever Jamie said post match about not worrying about not scoring and, you know, blah blah blah. Of course he has been, and all his teammates know it, and we all know it. And Matt Ryan burst through. I mean, he is a goalkeeper, so it did take him three quarters of an hour to get there. But I don't know what you say about Matt Ryan apart from superlatives. I think his form on the field is outstanding, and his status off the field is growing by the minute.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I spoke to Brett Holman about, you know, the situation Australia was in after the Jordan loss. And I said, when you played with all these big personalities, the golden generation, what was done in those, when there was a downturn in form or a big loss? He goes, I looked to a Schwarzer, a Kuehl, a Baduka to do something, say something. And he said, now they're looking to a Matt Ryan and a Tom Rogic and a Mark Milligan to do something. And he said, I was so impressed with Matt Ryan's comments, saying we were complacent, we're naive. He's not shooting from the hip. He's thought about, firstly, what he has to say, but the strategy behind it. I need to send a message that that's not acceptable. So that's Matt Ryan jumping up a massive level, isn't it, to that of leader. Whereas maybe a year or two ago with Cahill and Jedinak, he doesn't think about that. All of a sudden, he's put the onus on himself. Has that led to a better performance? Who knows? But it's had some sort of impact, no doubt.
Yeah, and look, how old's Matt? He's still mid-20s. What, 26 or, I don't know, fill me in on the
six step. Or seven, yeah.
He's got a mile to go. And you're right, he has. It's not that he's... It's not opportunism, right? He hasn't been sitting back sensing, oh, the big guy's gone, now's my chance.
Yeah.
I don't get that Matty Ryan at all, which is one of the reasons, you know, I love this part of him. He, as a natural leader, he looks like... We've got Mark Milligan, who I think's a great captain, but Millsy's not a long-term proposition. And that's what natural leaders do. They just sort of suck in the big ones. They puff out the chest and think, well, it's got to be me. And who else is coming with me? And, you know, we're seeing the signs. And he's got a long... He stays injury-free. He has going to... The impact he's going to have on Australian football, I'm talking Matt Ryan, is going to be huge. Coming in the wake of Mile Jedinak, and these stories haven't been told yet. I can't wait for them to start coming out about Mile Jedinak, the captain, not the footballer.
Yeah.
I mean, he has to be in the pantheon of Australian sports captains across the sports for the things he's done for his teammates and the way he's led in difficult circumstances. And I can visualise this with Matt Ryan as well.
Well, he's 27 in April this year, so not too far off that. And you look at goalkeepers, what Mark Schwarzer did playing into his 40s in the Premier League. So we're talking about potentially the next Socceroos captain, and he could be the Socceroos captain for over a decade. How good would that be to have some solidity at the back right then and there?
For sure. All right, what does that win do? What does it do in terms of Australia's hopes? Do you now think, all right, I mean, you guys have seen just about every single game of this Asian Cup. They can now be a contender yet again. They're still in the second rung. They're not even in the ballpark. Where do you frame it after a win over, albeit, Palestine?
I just finished the last point off by saying we've gone from Mile Jedinak, a Central Coast Mariner, to Matty Ryan, a Central Coast Mariner, the Halcyon Day, and Trent Sainsbury, the other guy, I guess, who's in that discussion, a Central Coast Mariner. So with the difficulties around the Mariners at the moment, let's just pay credit where it's due.
Yeah.
Mate, the team's not there yet. It's not at a South Korea level. It's not at an Iran level. But South Korea look awesome to me. They've got my opinion, that quite clearly the best striker in the competition. Wang Yizhou is a beast of a player. He's a guy who can run at full tilt for 3.5 hours, and he can do so controlling the ball and bumping defenders out of the way and score at the end of it. And obviously, it's our common talking point over many years now. We haven't got that type of player. Not, I'm talking in a physical sense, that type of dominant presence in that penalty area. So yeah, today was a big step forward. But, you know, again, we've got to just tone things down because it is Palestine, right? And as much as Palestine have improved, and as impressive as Palestine are as a unit, as a team unit, full of spirit and playing for all sorts of existential reasons as well, and doing really, really well. When the draw came out, Australia slated to play against Palestine. If anyone seriously expected us to lose this match today, let alone not go close to ringing up a few goals, we would have been thinking about a different, you know, galaxy altogether. So a 3-0 win with a few more really good chances to score is about where we think they should be. Is that going to be good enough to knock off the tall poppies? It puts us in the ballpark, but it doesn't give us anywhere near close to favouritism, I wouldn't have thought.
And after the first up loss against Jordan, getting out of the group is what Socceroos fans want to see, and they've still got work to do against Syria on the final match day. But if they do finish runner-up in Group B, I think they play the runner-up of the Japan group, so maybe in Uzbekistan, and who's to know? I mean, we saw Turkmenistan take Japan to the wire, so who's to say we won't face Japan in a round of 16 instead of that quarterfinal tie we were hoping to avoid, some of us, so Australia and Japan could get through to the semi-final stage or what have you. But so much to play out over the remaining games in the group stage. And I think Graham Arnold surely answered a few critics today. He tweaked it the right way tactically. He's been criticised. I think he's down on cattle. That point isn't being made that well. It's being shut down by a few angles. But Boyle out, Moy out, having to blood pretty much Economides or re-blood him again, bring him back into the frame, having to play McLaren as a third or fourth choice striker, and he's leading the line in the first two games. I think Graham Arnold's done pretty well so far to rectify things after the first game.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he got his changes spot on for this one. What about the Asian Cup as a whole? You boys are calling just about every second day for Fox Sports, but also for the world feed that goes global. Are you enjoying the competition? I'm pretty much in cons with the Socceroos, so I don't get out of that bubble. Are you enjoying it all? Are you embracing it? What do you make of this Asian Cup in the UAE?
I think everyone's surprised by how competitive it has been, the expanded tournament going to 24. And suddenly, we sat in the crowd the other day on a rest day and went to the Vietnam game. And they pushed Iraq all the way in a fabulous 5-goal thriller. And I don't think we expected those games to be that close and that competitive and that goal-filled as we're seeing so far. Turkmenistan pushing Japan, as I mentioned earlier. So great games to watch, very watchable games along the journey, and a few standout teams, Iran and South Korea, who we spoke about on the round table, being among the favourites, and I think it's still looming that way. And as you pointed out earlier, on that round table, of course, Harps, I predicted that Jamie McLaren would score his first goal against Palestine in the second group game of the Asian Cup. I think that came off.
So. Yeah. I seem to recall you predicted Jamie McLaren would score on or about the 20th minute. In between two central defenders off a ball from Tommy Robbins. At least that's your recollection. Yeah, I love the Asian Cup. This is our fourth one as Australians now involved. There hasn't been a bad one. I think 2007, there was a couple of flat games. And the final was pretty forgettable, but Indonesia were great value. The Southeast Asia, Vietnam were great value in 2007. Haven't seen them since. And then they spring now with a big future. You talk to the local journo, Scott McIntyre, is an Aussie who follows Asian football very closely. He's massively upbeat about the future of Vietnamese football because of the investment. We're watching a couple of those players now. And sitting next to Speedy and watching the smile on his face, that'll be a lifetime memory for me in that stadium watching Vietnam and Iraq. It was a great feeling. This is a great tournament. I think it would be remiss of us not to acknowledge some relief around the place that the expanded format hasn't resulted in a bloodbath for some of the results. A couple of heavy defeats, but no cakewalks. The emergence of India has been I think so far the biggest story of the Asian Cup, if they can somehow manage to get through the third game and qualify, this is brilliant for the game on a global scale. They won their first game against a messy Thailand, who disappointed, even though they won their second, not the Thailand I've learnt to admire in World Cup qualifying. But India, in beating them, and then, mate, they pumped the UAE and lost 2-0. They hit the post twice. They hit three or four from... great, fantastic, fantastic. So, big story, India emerging, great tournament, more to come.
Yeah, that was another game we watched as neutrals on a day off, was India pumping Thailand. And the final goal, the toe poke, that's the best toe poke I've ever seen live.
That's Ronaldinho, yes.
A futsal finish, that was fabulous. And as we're speaking, to put it into context, what's happening in the AFC Asian Cup right now, South Korea have just taken the lead, closing in on halftime against the Kyrgyz Republic. In the 41st minute, it's Kim Min-jae, the centre-half, the monster, who's popped up with the goal.
I hope Kyrgyz don't get something from that game, because, I mean, we were there in 2015 for the start of Australia's road to Russia, and that country and that footballing community, I think, left a big impression on us. You get an idea when you go there of just how small time they are over there, and I mean that in the nicest possible way. For them to be at this stage competing against the Chinas and the South Koreas, it's an amazing job that they've done.
Was that your goat feature?
There was the goat feature. For those that don't know, the national sport of Kyrgyzstan is dead goat polo. So we rocked up there a day before the Socceroos arrived, and we met some Aussies, about five Aussies living there. We did a story with them, and they said the national sport is dead goat polo. I said, can we find a game? They said, don't ask questions, there'll be a game on this afternoon. And honestly, I'm not trying to make you sick if you're driving or you're eating right now, but they honestly kill a goat, and this is the national sport. This is, you know, the best players are the Tim Cahills and the Jonathan Thurstons and the Chris Judds of Kyrgyzstan. They can't walk around. They're superstars. They kill a goat. They try pick it up and then ride with it on a horse and throw it into a net. But because a goat can be awkward to hold, especially a dead one with limbs going everywhere, the other team actually knocks it off while they're holding it, picks it up themselves and goes the other way. I mean, that's it. This is the culture we're talking about, being so many light years behind the rest of the world, and yet they're over here competing. It's amazing, isn't it?
Oh, you say advanced. That might be in front of the court. It might all end up in the dead goat competition. They didn't look like anything like that against China the other day. They really pushed China. I mean, there's massive question marks about where Chinese football's at, although I noticed Wu Lei scored again in dispatching the Philippines. Another great story. The Philippines in that match against the Korea Republic, just enormous. And, you know, their fans just enjoyed themselves so much. There's really not a lot to be down about the Asian Cup. And the expanded format had a few people, you know, with the worry beads out, but it's vindicated itself so far. And if it gets through the group stages and remains unscathed as an expanded property, not only will there be a lot of relief, there'll be a lot of impetus for these clubs, right? How can Asia really embolden itself and develop these unsophisticated, underdeveloped markets and get them up to speed? It's a great project. The world's most populous continent, which underrepresents on a per capita basis at global tournaments.
Yeah.
The one thing that Asia has going for it is vast human capital reserves. And if an expanded AFC tournament can excite these different pockets, you're talking 105 million Philippines, 70 odd million in Vietnam, over a billion Indians, etc., etc., it's hard to get your head around what that can mean for the game in this region if these dominoes start to fall.
Boys, great stuff. We play Syria, Australia on Tuesday, late afternoon local time. That's the early hours of Wednesday morning, Australian time, the final group game. Hopefully three more points. Great job calling the game so far. I'm sure it's draining, but you're doing a wonderful job, that is for sure. Stay tuned to Fox Sports. The Asian Cup coverage continues. Hopefully the Socceroos can march on. Andy Harper, we will leave your hotel room and let you get washed up, freshened up, and then we might just see what Dubai has to offer in terms of a nightlife. Boys, thank you very much.
Thanks, Garby, and give us your feedback on Twitter on how we functioned with one microphone between us. Modern-day podcasting from the Intercontinental.
The dead goat's in the back room.